Well, Paula, I'm excited today. You know why? Because we're having another open phones segment, which I thought was just great the last time we had it. And the Spirit really, really led us during the show, as He always does. But I thought it was just a really, just a great opportunity for us to kind of go wherever the Spirit leads. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to kind of take this opportunity to kind of let people know what we're about to do on the show in the next few weeks, because we're going to do something kind of different.
Sure.
And I'm sorry?
I said, sure, go for it.
Great. We're going to do something a little different in the next few several weeks, probably maybe even in the next 6 or 7 weeks, although we'll still have an open phone segment at the end of next month. But I am very interested in doing something. I've created a series, folks, called the Outside the Box series. That's what we're going to be doing for the next several weeks. And what that means is this. The guests that we're going to have on the show are going to be people from outside the Urantia community. They may have heard of the Urantia book, they may have not, but they are people who are not regular Urantia book readers. They are people who are on the cutting edge, I believe, of course, that's just my opinion, that I believe they're on the cutting edge of science, philosophy, and religion, and cultural and social issues. They're people who are just really innovative thinkers. And why am I doing that? I mean, some of you are going to listen and say, well, gee, what's the point of that? I mean, you know, we could hear those people on all kinds of different shows. Why put them on on the Cosmic Citizen, which is those devoted to the Urantia book? Well, a few weeks ago we had a show with Stephen Dreyer, who talked about how the Revelators used existing human sources all over the Urantia book and combined them with revealed truth. And actually integrated them into the revelation. And I believe that as Urantia book readers, we need to be doing the same thing. I remember hearing somebody tell me about a Urantia book reader, a couple that said, well, we found the Urantia book and we haven't read another book since. What is the point? That is exactly the opposite attitude, I believe, of what the Revelators want us to have. I believe the Revelators want us to think deeply and dig deeply into all kinds of information and all kinds of philosophy. So, and the other thing is, a lot of these thinkers that we're going to have on confirm a lot of the things that we already know to be true in the Urantia book. So that should just strengthen our faith. It gives us a great opportunity for dialogue. One of the ones I'm most excited about, I only have a date for one of the guests so far, and I'm very excited about this one, Paula. Her name is Julia Dean. Julia Dean is a reporter for the Washington Times, which is my favorite newspaper, and I will put a shameless plug in for that paper when she gets on the air, I promise you. But anyway, she has written a book called, she's a religion reporter, and she's written a book called Quitting Church, Why the Faithful Are Leaving in Droves and What to Do About It. And it's absolutely fascinating. And the interesting thing that she points out in her book is that people are quitting church, but they're not quitting God. And, you know, what a great opportunity for us as Urantia book readers to share the message of the gospel. What does the book say? It says that the Christian church is the cocoon in which the kingdom of God now slumbers. So, you know, this dying of the church, or this you know, it should be great news, because one of two things will happen. Well, I think both things will happen. I think two things will happen. One thing will happen is that churches will either be forced to change or die, and the ones that will not change will die. But the ones that will change will adapt to what the Spirit is doing. And the other thing that's going to happen, I believe, is that we'll see alternative institutions created, house churches, informal gatherings. And I think it will be, as the book kind of points out, this will be an opportunity for the real brotherhood of Spirit believers to emerge. So I just want people to know, that's just one of the guests I'm looking into. I'm also looking into Carlton Pearson. Well, actually, she's definitely a for sure. I'm also looking into Carlton Pearson. Carlton Pearson is a pastor in Oklahoma who had a church of several thousand members, but his church is now down to a couple of hundred because he started preaching that everybody goes to heaven. Charles Murray is another guy I'd like to have on. Charles Murray is a guy who wrote the controversial book, The Bell Curve. He also wrote a new book called Real Education. And I want to talk to him about the reality of human differences, the fact that there are differences between the sexes, there are differences between the races, there are differences in ability between people. And that's something that we know to be true from the Urantia book, and it's something that is very difficult for us to discuss in our society because we have a lot of egalitarian assumptions in our politically correct culture. We think if you, God forbid, you say anybody's better at something than something else. Of course, you can say that someone has, you can say, well, I'm not very athletic, but you can't say, well, someone has a higher IQ or a lower IQ. Anyway, so Paula, I just wanted to take this opportunity to let the audience know that that we're going to be going on a new track for the next 6 or 7 weeks.
Well, Andrea, I applaud you for going after these great guests, and you've done a great job so far with the interesting Your Rancho guests, and I'm really looking forward to talking to some of these people who are really current in their field, just as those source authors were current in their field, in their day. I think, you know, what would we give to be able to talk to some of those folks? And we still have that opportunity. We shouldn't shut that door or that window. We should open it up and talk to folks, and, you know, maybe we'll have as much of an effect on them as they'll have on us, and that would be fantastic.
Yes, it would. And speaking of dialogue, that's what this show is about. This is our open phone show, so please feel free to call in.
Oh, we already have a caller, Andre. Shall we?
Oh, good. Well, good. Then I don't even have to say anything. All right. Shoot.
Hold on. Here we go.
Hello.
250. You're on Cosmic Citizen.
Hey, Paula.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Alex Peacemaker up in British Columbia, Canada.
It's Brother Alex. Bro, so good to hear from you.
Oh, so good to hear your voice and the show also. Yeah. I wish it well. Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Andre, do you know Alex from Peacemaker Records in Canada?
I don't think so.
Oh. He has been producing records for many, many years, and one of his one of his favorite stars is Dark Firecloud, who is a Zydeco artist.
Wow.
And he lives. Alex, tell us a little bit about what's up with you lately.
Well, I met you at IC99 in Vancouver, and since then, my wife Gretchen and myself have moved to the interior of British Columbia, and we quite synchronistically landed right next to a bunch of extinct Indians called called the Sinaiks. And it is proven to be very providential to us, because it's opened up whole new worlds of revelation. These people, the Sinaiks, we're called the Mother Tribe. But they classify time as BW, before Whitey. And although they're very non-racialistic people, they're very loving people, very hospitable to all.
So you're kind of living in a wilderness environment there, Alex?
Well, I don't know if you could find one of those anywhere on the planet totally anymore, but it's a relatively undeveloped area. These native folks that we live with were called a mother tribe before this era. And as such, they have a very profound connection with anciency. They have a very relatively undiluted connection to their own history. And it's very synchronistic, because they talk about the life carriers inseminating life on this planet in three regions.
Wow.
Yes.
They do?
Yes, they do.
In their own, what's the name of this tribe? You said the Mother Tribe, but what is
it? It's Sinaiks. It's spelled S-I-N-I-X-T.
Now, you're not a Sinaiks Indian yourself, are you?
No, I'm not. I just landed here, right next to them, and they're the only Native nation in Canada to have been officially declared extinct. Of course, we know many Indigenous peoples were made extinct in fact, and many Native nations were made extinct through bureaucratic amnesia, but these ones are the only ones who were declared extinct in Canada.
How can they be declared extinct if they still exist? I don't understand.
Well, that's a good question, and they're coming out of extinction right now. There is no website of their own yet. Hopefully there will be soon, but a lot of information can be found about them. No.
Now, are you saying, let me see if I get this right, are you saying that their own religious traditions speak of the life carriers?
Speak of what?
Life carriers.
The life carriers.
The light, yes, they do. And
really?
They specifically say life was inseminated in three regions on this planet. And of great interest to me is, you know, the Urantia book talks about the life development plan was aborted in one region. And, of course, we know the profound implications of the life development plan in the region of Anton and Fonda. But it very mysteriously does not talk about what happened in the third region. And
What were the other two? Okay, there was Anton and Fonda, which was Asia. What was the other region the Urantia book discusses?
Well, it just simply says that the plan faltered in one region.
Oh, okay.
And I don't have the at hand. I don't have those quotes to pull out, but it's specifically in there, yes. And as I said, mysteriously, it doesn't talk about what happened to the life development plan in the third region. And these Sinaiks assert that this was that region. Their own history talks about having to coexist with terrible serpents and flying pterodactyls. They've been here for a while.
You know,
wow.
It reminds me of the section in the Urantia book where it says evolution is not a modern discovery, that the ancient peoples understood that, you know, in fact, there were the New Guinea tribes thought they were descended from the parrot, and there are other African tribes that thought they were descended from the hyena and that kind of thing. Does this tribe say anything about us being descended from any particular animals?
No. No, and there's a lot of anthropological misunderstanding about, for example, clans giving themselves names like the Badger Clan or the Bear Clan, and it's little understood. I may be switching subjects just slightly off of your question. I'll get back to that, but it's little understood that this clan system was a form of self-government to prevent inbreeding because you could not marry within your own clan. And, you know, anthropologists very superficially often say, well, this is just very child-minded people, you know, and it's a form of anthropomorphism. But they haven't really looked into it deeper, that there was a very profound and successful way of life that existed for a long, long time without degenerating their DNA. As to your question,
say they are a mother tribe, are you
they're the mother tribe of all the vast Salishan linguistic dispersion. The Salishan people started up where we are in the area of Nelson, British Columbia, the upper headwaters of the Columbia River.
Uh-huh.
And the Sinaiks assert that over many, many hundreds of thousands of years, even million years, their descendants went down the Columbia River and then up the coast and across land. And there's a couple hundred Native nations who are part of that Salishan linguistic dispersion, yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, that is amazing, Alex. And, you know, you had told me that you were living in that area and just how spiritually rich this experience had been for you because ending up nearby this tribe.
Yes, it is. And it's, you know, it's really good to get away from what can become printed page paralysis and live life experientially.
Well, you know, I think one of the things I think is great that you're doing, is your name Alex, you said?
Yes.
Alex. One of the things that I think is so great, Alex, that you're doing is you are doing exactly what we were talking about a few minutes ago. You're integrating your faith, in the Urantia book with other existing religious traditions, which I think is excellent. I mean, you know, you're not just isolating yourself only with your Urantia book readers. You know, you're actually interacting with tribes and discovering their spirituality and their spiritual traditions, and that's. That's fantastic. I really commend you for doing that, and I think that's. I actually see more and more readers of the Urantia book doing that. I don't get me wrong. I love being around the Urantia book readers. I wish I could live next door to a whole bunch of them, but I'm just saying that it's very. But again, I think you know, what you're doing again is exactly what I believe the Revelators want us to do.
Yes, it is. And for me and my wife, it's also integrating our life of service.
Wow. So do this Enix have any prophecies for the future here? I mean, you know, the Native Americans are so tapped into spirit, I mean, in my experience. And the Urantia book says that the red man is the most spiritual race. So have they, I mean, I'm real curious about their take on what's going on in the world. Have they told you that, Alex?
Well, as Native folks have, you know, vast prophecies, you know, and they assert that, you know, we have free will. Life is in our hands, and it can go various ways. And what our planet has come to at this time is a turning point. And unless righteousness increases, and people do learn to, you know, righteous self-governance, that it lights out for this planet. They talk about that the celestial personalities do control forces like the sun, and that the sun has a switch on it, and it can be lights out at any time. And but they're not pessimists by any means. they know that our ancestors are intergalactic life carriers and travelers, and life goes on no matter what may happen to this planet. And if this planet is going to be sterilized, that life, you know, will return. You can take paradise, put up a parking lot, but a little leaf of grass will always poke up through it.
Hey, Ben, well, that's funny you should mention that, because you've been a record producer for a long time. Well, you know, Joni Mitchell is one of my favorite artists, and she's from Canada, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm having a hard time hearing every one of your words, brother. What was your name again?
My name is Andre.
I said
you're a record producer, and it's funny you should mention Paradise Put Up a Parking Lot, because I said that Joni Mitchell is one of my favorite artists, and she's from Canada, isn't she?
Yes, she is. She's from Saskatchewan. I think she now lives on the Sunshine Coast up above Vancouver.
Oh, so I didn't realize she still lives in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, she lives in the Seashelt area up above Vancouver.
You know, that reminds me, while I've got you on the phone, since you're a record producer, I've got to ask you this. You know, another one of my favorite bands was Rush, and of course, you know, they're from Canada, and they have a song that has a direct quote in it from the Urantia book, unless the Urantia book is quoting another source here. They have a song called Witch Hunt, and it says, and there's a part in there where it says, ignorance and prejudice and fear walk hand in hand, which is right out of the Urantia book. But I wonder if they, I know that Neil Peart, the drummer, was a big fan of Ayn Rand, but I don't know if they've ever looked at the Urantia book or not.
Well, just talking about Urantian music, I just want to big up Pato Banton. He's got a new album out with some beautiful songs on it.
Did you know that we had him on the air last week?
Oh, you did?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
We did a whole 2 hours with him.
Okay. All right. I just caught mention of your show on Ubron the other day.
Right. That's because our tech, Larry Watkins, our tech guy, posted it up there.
That's right. Yeah. And Dark Fire Cloud has recently opened up his own website. That can be found at darkcloud.ch, which is the code for Switzerland, where he presently lives.
Great.
And Dark Fire Cloud is a Urantia book reader too, right?
Long time. He's the one who introduced me to the Urantia book in 1973.
Right.
Is he a native of Switzerland, or where is he from?
No, he's from Lafayette, Louisiana. He's a Creole. He's got African, European, and Native Indian lineage in him. His mother is an Attakapas Native Indian.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things I wanted to say when I called in, Paul, is I just really wanted to thank you for your quote of the day, because quite often it just whams me in the side of the head when I read it in the morning. It's,
well, you know, I'm really glad you brought that up, because it's a great opportunity to put a plug in for something that's very, very dear to my heart, and that is the website truthbook.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's truthbook.com. And for years, my good friend Mo Siegel and I worked diligently to create that site. We're both a couple of Urantian evangelists. For those of you who don't know Mo, he was the founder and president of Celestial Seasonings Tea Company, and then he currently is a trustee at Urantia Foundation. Anyway, he's a devoted Urantia book reader, and I've been studying the book with him since 1977, and he and I discovered pretty early on that we were both evangelists for the Urantia book, and we just felt a great passion to get the information out there somehow, some way. And he knew that was my heart, so he incorporated me to do a great deal of outreach and do public introductions with the Urantia book. And he was a patron of that. He's always been a patron of outreach. And so, you know, and our good pal Larry Watkins, who mans our board, hi Larry, love you so much. In 1996, he and I started talking about what we could do to create a presence on the web that was truly Jesusonian, not, you know, you would search for Jesus on the web back in those days, and what you would get was Christianity, and that's fine, you know, but Christianity is full of doctrine, and it's full of the things that it wants to promote, and churches and stuff, but when you would search for Jesus, that's what you would get. You wouldn't get Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Larry up one day, and I said, Larry, wouldn't it be great if you got Jesus, when you searched for Jesus, you actually got Jesus. And I think that's our job, Larry. Let's create a site where when people search for Jesus, that's what they get. And so Larry and I started working together almost every day on a site that was originally jesusonian.org. And that evolved into truthbook.com. Mo got on the bandwagon later on, a few years later, he realized the potential of the Internet to really do the most amazing outreach ever and to reach thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, not just, you know, 15, 20 at a shot. So he got on, and when he got on, it obviously kicked it up to a whole new level, and truthbook.com is the result. And the quote of the day was something that was just a natural, and we said, you know, Mo would always tell me, you know, Paula, our job is to make the Urantia book relevant and to make it not so strange to people. People think it's strange and weird and fringe, and it's not.
Well, sure it is. I mean, sure people think that. I mean, you tell people that we believe that, you know, Adam and Eve were actually 8-foot-tall beings from another planet who came here and had violent skin, and we're supposed to produce genetically superior people, people think we're crazy. But it's interesting because those same people believe things that other people might think would be equally crazy. I mean, my friend, I have a friend who thinks it's incredulous that I believe this, but yet he believes so strongly in the Bible that he thinks that he rationalizes the stuff in the Bible about God being wrathful and angry by saying, well, God made mistakes. So I guess everybody's entitled to their own faith idiosyncrasies, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
just on that, to finish that thought about the quote of the day, Alex, I gave you a little history.
Mm-hmm.
When I left Jesusonian in 2006, quote of the day had over 5,000 subscribers, and I know it's probably way more than that now. And I can tell you that we worked very, very hard to make that quote meaningful and beautiful. With the art, I mean, we labored over that,
mm-hmm.
And you can see Maynard Grafe and Mo now are knocking them out of the ballpark almost every day. The quotes are stunning, the pictures are stunning,
mm-hmm.
And really proud of that effort. It's a great effort.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a free subscription. It's a quote that comes to your email every day. If our listeners don't know, you can go to truthbook.com and subscribe and get a beautiful free quote every day.
Yeah, well, often, you know, when I put on my computer and look at it, I say, how do they know that's what I just needed to to think about right now? It's very synchronistic. I commend you. I commend this show. I wish it the best. And,
thank you, Alex.
I encourage all Urantia book lovers to live a life of service, you know. Like Bob Marley used to sing, live for yourself, you will live in vain. Live for others, you will live again. And like John Bunyan wrote in Pilgrim's Progress, there was a man who gave so much they called him mad, but the more he gave, the more he had. So it's really about living a life of service. And that is that's said to us repeatedly in the life and teachings of Jesus. It all comes down to living a life of service. And so I send you love, Paula. It was nice meeting you telephonically, Andre.
Thank you.
All the best to your show.
Thank you.
And,
okay.
And bro, I sure would love to come up and visit you sometime.
Well, you should. Come for a family visit. You're always welcome here.
All right.
God much
bless
love.
You, man.
Okay. Much love.
Much
bye.
Love. Bye.
Well, do we have any more callers yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give out the number again. 646-716. 8158. That's 646-716-8158. And if you just want to call and chat and bond, this is we have a little extended family here on the Cosmic Citizen. We can talk about anything you want to talk about. And I just want to commend Alex. I think it's great that he's doing that. That he's living a life of service. That he's gotten interested in the religious community. I mean, that's just awesome. I think that's just that's exactly the kind of thing that I think, to me, that's a great example for us.
You know, Andre, I feel so blessed. I feel so, so blessed that I've met so many Urantia book readers in this country, in North America, and even now in the world. But people like Alex, he calls himself Bro Alex, and we really are at our best when we just are the family of God, and we know it. And Alex, when I worked at Jesusonian Foundation in Boulder, Alex and his wife Gretchen came by one day, and we just sat and chatted. And there's a network of Urantia book readers that you can go and just be with, and it's like being with family. All of the barriers
absolutely
are
down.
And that
absolutely
is when we're at our best, and that is what is so beautiful about us, is that we can go to each other's homes and we are welcomed as family, because in our hearts we know that is the truth. We are God's children. We
well,
are
you know,
family.
You know what? I want to just piggyback on it, because not only is that true, Paul, but I remember one day, years ago, back in 1995, I went to Houston, Texas, for the National Association of Radio Talk Show Hosts Convention. Unfortunately, they don't have those conventions anymore. They're doing it all online now. But I remember staying with a guy named Glenn Bell, a Urantia book reader. I just asked him, are there any Urantia book readers in Houston? And I just called him up. He didn't even know me. And I wasn't even there for the Urantia book. For any kind of Urantia event, and he said, "Oh, we'll take care of you." You know, I just went and stayed at his house, and we had a good chat, and we had a good time. And you know, year after that, I stayed. I went to the talk show host convention in Washington D.C. Stayed with Dan and Allison Massey in Virginia, and I had known them for a while. Your point again is well taken, which is that, you know, the Urantia community really is an extended family, and I find that particularly healing for me. Because I don't feel that kind of bond with my own biological relatives. I mean, I know that I could stay at the houses if I wanted to, but that's not the point. The point is that I don't feel that sense of warmth, that sense of community. So especially for those of us who don't, may not come from the most functional of biological families, we know that we have a spiritual family, and one that's here, right here.
You know, I think that is the central lesson of the book, too. That's it. If you could boil it down to one thing, it is that you simply have to let the love of God for his children flow through you. And you have to see all men and women as your brothers and sisters. And it's not that, you know, the book is not unreasonable in that it's asking you to love one another arbitrarily. It's not. It's saying, you know, you have to get to know them so that you can fall in love with them. But it's admonishing us to take the time to get to know each other.
That's right. That's right.
And that is why I think when you learn that lesson, you let them into your home and you let them into your heart, and there you go. You know, they're there, and you fall in love. You get to know them. You know their motives and sentiments, and you fall in love with them. And that's happened to me over and over and over again. And I know, I mean, sometimes I think, how much love can one heart hold for humanity? Well, if you want to be like God, you have to expand that capacity for love. You just have to keep growing it and expanding it and adding to it. And it's like that great quote from the book that says, you know, if each day or each week you can learn to love one more fellow, and if that is the, you know, the most you can do, then you are truly socializing your personality. And
absolutely. And you know what? It's funny you should say that, Paula, because that's what the book is saying. It's like, you know, we learn to love one person at a time. And, you know, yeah, we can have a universal love for humanity, but if we're not learning to love people by getting to know them one at a time, it reminds me of a bumper sticker, or it's either a bumper sticker, or it's, I think it's a bumper sticker that is meant to be a joke, but it says, I love humanity, it's just people I can't stand. So, you know, it's one thing to love humanity in the abstract, but Jesus loved people in the particular. And not only in the particular, but, you know, if you remember Jesus, the book says Jesus was never in a hurry. You know, that he was the most important person, the most important thing in Jesus' life was the person that was in front of him right now at that very moment.
Yes.
And that is, I believe, you know, what we, you know, that's why I try, you know, I mean, I don't always do it, but I try as much as possible to give my full attention to the people I'm talking to, because, you know, I want them to know that they're important to me, and that, you know, if I don't have time for them at that particular time, then I will, create a time when I can give them my full attention so I'm not distracted or tuning out, you know.
Oh, I know, and that's no easy thing to do in this world. Andre, we got another caller.
Good.
See who we got here. 562, you're on Cosmic Citizen. Hello?
Yes, Paula and Andre, how are you this morning? This is Norman Ingram.
Hey, Norman.
Hi, Norman.
How's everything going?
Good, good. Did you get to hear our interview with Pacho last week?
Oh, yes, it was absolutely marvelous. In fact, he was by a couple of days ago, and we did nothing but give the program and that segment of it a praise. Is all we could do, just be thankful that we
That's
were
awesome.
Able to do so.
That's
well,
awesome.
Talk about a brother that is just a love. Here is one, Norman. You are.
I had a couple of paychecks last couple of weeks. My paycheck is when I hear from people abroad that we've turned on to the Urantia book. And a couple of weeks ago, I got one from Indonesia, and their study group is focused on how to recognize and cooperate with the adjuster. And so I thought it might be good today if we could maybe say our favorite quote about the adjusters, and I'll pass it on to them. Do you two have any ideas of what you hold in high esteem about our thought adjusters in the Urantia book?
What a in terms of a quote?
Yeah, any particular quote that's special, a favorite of yours about?
Well,
the
there's thought. So many.
I know, but I mean one, just one.
Give me ahead. A second, I'll find one.
Okay, but then I also got a letter from. Harare, Zimbabwe, and it was a letter actually mailed from Africa, East Africa, and they were 8 years ago we were there, and it took them 8 years to respond. They said that they thought of us many times after we left. That was Pradana and I at that time when we were recovering the east coast of Africa, and it took him 8 years to answer, but he said he's had it on his mind since then. So when you get things like this, this is a missionary's paycheck. When you get responses from people that you've met years and years ago, and then they come back still remembering the acquaintance and the short meeting that we had, they just have to praise God for all the effort that goes into outreach and Did we find any quote yet or any comments?
I found a quote, but I want to, before I read this quote, and this is just one, and there are so many.
Oh, I know.
There's actually two I'd love to share, but I just want to say for our listeners who don't know, Norman Ingram has a group that he calls You Know, which is Urantian Nations Outreach. And for many, many years, Norman, again, is a wonderful evangel for the Urantia book and has gone all over South America, Central America, all over Africa, on foot in many instances. He's seen things that most of us will never even imagine, people with limbs hacked off in Africa. He has planted Urantia books in major libraries all over the world, made it a personal mission. I'll never forget one day many years ago, Norman, before you picked up this mission, you showed me a map and you said, and it had pins in it, and you said, here is where Father has asked me to go, and this is all of the countries that I'm going. And my hat's off to you, bro, because you actually went to every single one of those countries in that pin that was in the map. He's been in Asia. He has just been all over the place. And when you say your payday is when these people call you back or write you and say, Norman, this book is changing my life. And I think for many, many years, Norman, we'll see the fruit of the efforts of the seeds you planted. And so thank you. Thank you so much for all you do, Norman. You know you're one of my heroes because you walk the walk. And I love that about you. I love your heart and I love your sincerity. And you're just your big tree, Pradana, our dear friend Pradana, that you turned onto the book in Peru. He calls you Big Tree. You are like a big tree. A big tree has deep roots and great love, and a big tree provides much love and much service to everybody around with shade and comfort. And you're like that. You are a big tree. So thank you, Norman. Thank you so much. And it gives me great joy to be able to thank you on air. And I'm so glad you called. Here's a quote about
mine, that's for sure.
I know how you feel. Norman always tells me, folks, you know, for many years, Norman would say, another day to romp and play in the Father's universe. And I love that. Wake up every day, and oftentimes I think, another day to romp and play. And I salute you for that, Norman.
Well, I've been to a few places, but we've not even scratched the surface. So if anybody
I know. We got lots of work to do.
Anyone to join in the mission, you're more than welcome.
Norm, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
And I had to step away for a second, Paula. Did you read the quote that?
No, not yet. Not yet. Let me do that. I've been gushing about Norman, so my heart is full of gratitude today for the beautiful Urantia book readers that I know. Ann Garner, I know you're listening, darling. I love you so much. And Diane LeBrec. We've had many of these guests on our show, and hopefully we'll have many more. And they're doing things. There's lots of good things going on. People are getting the word out. And I hope all of our readers take that to heart.
They are two of my prayer partners there, Pan. God bless you.
Prayer warriors, as Andre calls Anne, a prayer warrior. Well, anyway, here's a quote. This is the first one that came to mind. I told you I have two. So this is from part one, The Central and Super Universe, paper two, The Nature of God. Section 5, The Love of God. It says, how unreasonable that you should not worship God because the limitations of human nature and the handicaps of your material creation make it impossible for you to see him. Between you and God, there is a tremendous distance, physical space, to be traversed. There likewise exists a great gulf of spiritual differential which must be bridged. But notwithstanding all that physically and spiritually separates you from the paradise personal presence of God, stop and ponder the solemn fact that God lives within you. He has, in his own way, already bridged the gulf. He has sent of himself his spirit to live in you, to toil with you as you pursue your eternal universe career.
You know, I mean, as you read that, Paula, you have this way, it's amazing. Alex was telling us, I didn't realize you do a quote of the day because I don't get them, but I didn't know that you did that. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me because you're great at digging up quotes. And when you read them out loud, you emphasize the parts that just, you emphasize things that I just didn't even think about before. You know, like when it says that God has already bridged the gap. I mean, that's amazing. That never occurred to me before, but, you know, it's really true.
That solemn fact. Stop to ponder it. Ponder it for a minute. God has already bridged the gap. He lives in you.
That's right.
How beautiful is that? How amazing is that?
Yes,
it's here's the other one, and these two have to go hand in hand, you guys, because this one, I got to say, that one is superb, and this one is superb as well. And this is on the other end of the book. Interestingly enough, it's from paper 196, The Faith of Jesus, which we discussed with Diane LeBrec. The Faith of Jesus, Section 3, The Supremacy of Religion. It says, unless a divine lover lived in man, he could not unselfishly and spiritually love. Unless an interpreter lived in the mind, man could not truly realize the unity of the universe. Unless an evaluator dwelt with man, he could not possibly appraise moral values and recognize spiritual meanings. And this lover hails from the very source of infinite love. This interpreter is a part of universal unity. This evaluator is the child of the center and source of all absolute values and divine and eternal reality. Isn't that beautiful?
Absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely. I just can't get over the fact that this fragment of God, the thought of Joseph that lives within us, that we confused with that fragment. And may we all fuse in time to come.
You know, can I ask you something? Can I ask you something, Norm? This is off the subject, but since we've got those two quotes, I want to ask you something. And this is controversial, but that's what talk radio is about. It's about controversy. At least that's one of the things it's about.
We have plenty of that controversy.
It's not all about
well, you
love.
Know what? You know what? People call me. You know, my last name is Traversa. People call me Andre Controversa. So you know. let me run something by you, and I'd like to get your feedback on it. You know, last week we spoke with Pacho Vance, and one of the things we talked about is the whole issue of race in the Urantia book and how the Urantia book looks at the race issue. And, you know, you've planted lots of books in Africa. And one of the things that I have heard from a lot of readers is a lot of people say that that black people in Africa are more receptive to the book than a lot of African Americans are. And I think I mentioned this to Pacho on the air last week. I remember asking Pacho in person why he thinks that is, and he said, well, because black Americans believe in black pride and black people around the world believe in peace and love. But let me ask you a question. Do you find that a lot of black readers are receptive, what has been your experience with black readers in Africa? Have you found that they've been receptive to the book, you know, even though the book says some pretty controversial things about the indigo race?
Yes, that subject came up when we were in Africa, and not from the Africans. It was people that were contacting me from the United States and said, oh, well, what do they think about what the Urantia book says about the black folks in the Urantia book? Well, I asked that to, Musa Ndiaye, and he wrote a paper on it. And if you like, I could send that paper to you. But along with his comments and Prince John Baidu comments, his take on that was that we asked him, I said, where it says, you know, they may be inferior of mind and so on. And he said that when we read that at our study group, we just accept it as a fact, but we know God loves us just as much as any of the rest of us, so we just go right on through. It doesn't bother us. It's
so
like
you have,
that.
You have papers from African leaders that have written about this?
Yes, Musa Ndiaye, the Muslim teacher that lives in Dakar, Senegal, wrote a nice paper on that.
Yeah, but he doesn't. But it's in French, right?
I beg your pardon?
It's in French, isn't it?
Well, it was in French, but it was translated for me. Yes.
That's awesome. I would love to see that. If you could get that through my email, I'd very much appreciate it.
Okay, I have to go back into old files, but it's still there, and it was a beautiful paper.
Well, that's okay. Whatever you get a chance. That's fascinating to me. That's just fascinating. Well, it's just
Norman.
It's,
you should post something like that on the UNO website, because then you could direct people there, and many people could see it, or send it to David or something, so that we can post it and let more people benefit from it.
But I thought it was just beautiful. The answer that Prince John gave on that was the fact that God loves us equally as much. So they have no problem with that. Well, very good. I'll let it go for now. Thank you for your thoughts on the Thought Adjuster, and we will keep up the program. It's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous, and know that the Cosmic Citizenship broadcast is in my prayers daily.
Norman, before you hang up, Bro Dave on the board wanted to share this one quote with you as well, and it's from The Life and Teachings of Jesus.
Beautiful.
And Training the Evangels, and paper 148, and Jesus simply said, "Do you not comprehend that God dwells within you, that he has become what you are, that he may make you what he is?"
Oh, fantastic. Absolutely. Thank you,
David.
I'll pass that on to the folks in Indonesia, and I'll go for now so others can come on. But keep up the good work, and God bless everyone.
Thank you, Norman. God bless you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Aloha, no.
Aloha, no.
Paul, do we have any more callers yet?
Not yet.
I'm sorry?
No, not yet.
Okay, good. I would like to do, if you're able to, cue up some music. I'd actually like to step away here for a minute so I can take care of some business. So if we have any music we could play in the meantime and return to our calls, that would be great.
Well, do you want another Pato song or?
Sure, whatever we what do you want to do here? In fact, why don't we play a Pato, a little bit of a Pato song, so that we can in honor of Mr. Ingram, who works with Pato.
Okay, that's a good idea. Here we go.
Life is what you make it. If you see an opportunity, ya know you better take it. And don't you mistake it, and don't you fake it, no. The golden rule, don't you break it. See, life can be a fantasy or a reality. It's just a state of your mentality. Don't lose your soul to vanity, it's insanity. Come show some love for humanity. My name is Pato Banta. Psychology, and no man can erase it. There's a natural mystic blowing in the air, yeah. Science cannot trace it, but I can feel it, hear it, see it, smell it. I can even taste it. My name is Pato Banta. We'll be right back.
Version 3. Very good one. I think
awesome.
That's my favorite of them. And Andre, we've got a couple more callers. So we
Excellent. Let's shoot
okay,
here.
Hold on. 562, you're on Cosmic Citizen. Oops. Well, we'll let that one go.
That's weird, because that was Norm's area code. Maybe
that's what
that.
Norm was, yeah. Maybe he didn't hang up all the way. 919, you're on Cosmic Citizen. Hello? Area code 919?
Hello?
Hello? Who's this?
Yeah, I heard them say something for a minute.
Hello? Area code 919?
Hmm.
Well, I guess not, Andre. Maybe they gave up on us.
Okay. So our callers are gone, I assume.
Well, here's 562 back. Hold on.
I can't sign on this morning, so I just was using the telephone, and so every time I come back on, I get online. So.
Oh well, Norman, are you? Do you want to just hang with us on the phone here and listen?
Oh, okay, fine. Yes, I'll do that. That's right.
Okay, that's fine. You know, Anne did that last week too because she couldn't get on and. Our lines are never all that busy, so hold on.
Okay.
We got another caller. Hold on.
Fantastic.
Aww.
Area code 503, you're on Blog Talk.
Hi, Paula. This is Joy.
Hi, Joy.
Hi.
Hey, Joy. I remember you. I remember you. We talked a little bit at ICOA.
At the conference. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, this
Hi,
is
Joy.
My first time of getting on here. I thought it started at 11, but I guess somebody was in a different time zone when they said that. I mean, it's, you know, 9 this time here in Oregon.
Well, so how are you out there in Oregon?
I'm just doing great.
And you are, it's kind of like this is outreach day. We're getting all the outreachers who are calling. I have to tell our listeners, Joy in Oregon has a wonderful prison ministry that she does with the Urantia book. And she corresponds with prisoners and sends books out to prisoners. And so God bless you for that, Joy. I'm so glad you called.
You know, actually, there's something else I thought I would call about, and that is I've gotten involved with Peter Lawrence's Urmia project.
Oh, fantastic.
Something that the fellowship, I guess, is offering, which has to do with interfaith dialogue. And Peter Lawrence is sort of doing an email class where he's offering, you know, kind of instruction and he asks you questions, you have to answer and all. And he's trying to get your Urantia readers involved in interfaith work. And through this, I've ended up joining the Interfaith Council of Greater Portland, and it's really neat. There's going to be something called the Festival of Faith happening coming up in within this next month, where they're going to have, you know, different religions from, I mean, Portland has lots of religions, you know, here. And so they'll have, you know, speakers from different religions talk about their religion, and they'll have different table booths. And we're going to have a Urantia book table there. And anyway, I'm really excited about it.
So for our readers who don't know, give a little description of what Urmia means.
Oh, okay. In the Urantia book, Jesus was involved for a short time in something called Urmia lectures, where there was a man who started a school called the Urmia School, where all different people from different religions could come and I guess they were sharing their faith, you know, and Jesus gave a couple of lectures, I think, on the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man at this school. And if I help me remember this correctly, but everyone who belonged to the Urmia school believed in a personal God, or at least believed in God, but they were not allowed to cut down anyone else's religion. If they did that, they would be booted out. I think I'm remembering that correctly. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah. So Peter, who is a longtime interfaither and been a huge servant in the interfaith movement, has served in many capacities with North American Interfaith Movement and has just been a champion of interfaith understanding and education, is offering these classes for people who are interested in learning about other religions and understanding, coming to understanding of other religions, other religious beliefs and philosophies.
You know, Joy, if I can jump in here for a second, I'm very interested in, I keep talking to more and more readers that I really respect. Ann Garner in particular is talking about interfaith dialogue. And, you know, I'm becoming more and more interested in it. The only thing that concerns me about it a little bit, and I just want to know how you've, you know, what your experience has been with this, is, you know, we live in an age of political correctness, basically, where, you know, you're not supposed to talk about the differences between religions. You're not supposed to talk about, you know, well, okay, we believe this and you believe that. You know, it's almost like, I almost get the sense that sometimes with interfaith dialogue, people want to pretend like all religions are saying the same thing or believe the same thing. And I don't want to, and I don't, I have no interest in putting down another religion. But is it acceptable in interfaith circles to say, well, as a Christian, I believe such and such, or as a Urantia book reader, I believe such and such?
Yeah.
For example, we'll just give you one example. We've talked on the show about reincarnation, okay? As Urantia readers, we don't believe in that. Now, I'm not going to put down a person who believes in that, but would I, at an interfaith dialogue setting, would I be able to say, well, I don't personally believe in reincarnation. I believe in resurrection. You know, is that something that's going to ruffle feathers or get people upset, or is that kind of honest dialogue? Is that kind of honest admission okay?
Yeah, I obviously. Everybody believes different things, right? So, I mean, that the idea behind interfaith dialogue, I think, is to learn to respect each other and to just share with each other, you know? So, the Urantia book has a quote about beliefs, you know? Well, first of all, it distinguishes between faith and belief. Faith is something that takes over your whole life. You know, it's the core really of who you are. When you have faith, you you know, are devoted, you've devoted your whole life to living according to that faith, okay? Your belief in reincarnation is not faith,
right,
really.
Right.
You know, belief is an intellectual thing. And so I think that, you know, we recognize that we all have different beliefs. I mean, even within the Aranj movement, we have various beliefs on
right.
things,
right.
you know. And the thing is that we are, I would say, kind of the, what I'm finding is that we're alike, okay, in these various religions because we have faith, and we have faith in higher spiritual values. Our beliefs in things like, you know, in many, many different things. Our beliefs may be different, but, you know, each of us is motivated by a faith in higher values
mm-hmm.
and in God. I mean, I went to an interfaith service last week, the first time I've ever gone to one, and afterwards I got into some very interesting discussions. I got into a discussion with a Scientologist. Now, I have to admit that before my conversation with him, I had kind of, you know, been tolerant of Scientology, but I kind of looked down on it as not really being a real religion, but as being more a psychology or a philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But in talking to this man, I found out that they have eight what they call dynamics, or sort of like tenets of Scientology. And the eighth one is God. And this man said to me, he said, really, the goal of a Scientologist, the supreme goal, is to become perfect, like God is perfect. And I'm like, wow!
Wow, wow.
That's what the Aranj book says, you know? And I wouldn't have... you know, if I'd have been, you know, picking at sort of different beliefs or whatever that we might have, I didn't ever discover that. I mean, that was really neat. It was like, wow, brother, you know. And he's got the same goal that we've got. And
well, you know, one of the themes of today's show, Andre and Joy, seems to be getting to know people so you can
yes,
fall in
love yes.
them. And that's kind of an underlying thread that I've noticed. And there's a great quote about interfaith that I want to share. It's from the History of Urantia, Part 3 of the Urantia book, Paper 92, Section 7, The Further Evolution of Religion. It says, the many religions of Urantia are all good to the extent that they bring man to God and bring the realization of the Father to man. It is a fallacy for any group of religionists to conceive of their creed as, in italics, the truth. Such attitude bespeak more of theological arrogance than of certainty of faith. There is not a Urantia religion that could not profitably study and assimilate the best of the truth contained in every other faith, for all contain truth. Religionists would do better to borrow the best in their neighbor's living spiritual faith rather than to denounce the worst in their lingering superstitions and outworn rituals.
Wow.
Isn't that a great quote?
That is great. Where is that again?
Part 3, Paper 92, The Later Evolution of Religion, Section 7, The Further Evolution of Religion. And, you know,
okay.
I just, when you think about it, now think about when this book came through, that was clearly an interfaith quote.
Yeah.
I mean, back in a time when very few people were really thinking about, let's get to know every other faith on the planet, you know.
Uh-huh.
Maybe people like Ernest Holmes were, you know, really delving into the science of faith and the science of mind and religions. But you know, very few people were thinking, I think I ought to go get to know what Hindus are about, or Muslims, or Sikhs, or, you know, Jews, you know? And
right.
There it is right there, that we would do better to find the best in their faith and honor
right.
the best in their faith than denounce the worst in their superstitions and outworn rituals. So.
Right. There's another quote, and I'm sorry, I have page numbers from my old book, so I don't have the... let me look it up really fast. It's page 1130 in the Foundations book,
yeah.
which is paper 94, section 3, I guess. It says, while your religion is a matter of personal experience, it is most important that you should be exposed to the knowledge of a vast number of other religious experiences. And then in quotation marks it says, the diverse interpretations of other and diverse mortals, to the end that you may prevent your religious life from becoming egocentric, circumscribed, selfish, and unsocial.
Wow.
Yeah.
That says
yeah.
it pretty clearly, doesn't it?
yeah, yeah. So, you
Somebody
know, and I have
also.
To admit that, you know, mostly I socialize with your Rancher Book readers. And so by... getting involved with the Interfaith Council, I'm making new friends, and you know,
wow,
yeah, preventing my religious life from becoming egocentric. yeah,
Jesus,
you've really given me an idea here, Joy, because I live in an area where I don't have a chance to socialize with a lot of your Rancher Book readers. We get together for study groups, you know, every so often. We don't really socialize. And so a lot of my friends are evangelical Christians, which is great, which is fine. And I do feel special kinship with them, but I also get frustrated with them sometimes because I can't really say what I really believe. So I think I'm going to look up some interfaith gatherings in my area. And see what I can find and see, because you know I may end up meeting some pretty fantastic people, and so I'm gonna give it a shot. You've definitely given me something to think about, so I'm always looking to expand my social circle. So I'm gonna give it a try.
Right.
You know, Jesus had a simple acid test for religions, and he came to this conclusion when he was a very young man. His simple acid test was just, does it bring man closer to God?
Mm-hmm.
Does it bring God closer to man?
Mm-hmm.
And
I
that
understand
was
the bring man closer to God. What do you think he meant by bring God closer to man?
Well, I think that to the degree that anything brings us closer to God, it brings God closer to us. Because there's another great quote in the Urantia book that says, human things must be known to be loved, but divine things must be loved to be known. And so when we fall in love with God, I mean, in a sense, religions have done all they can to keep us separate from God and to supplant this middleman into the process. And the middleman becomes, as the Urantia book would say, like the fetish man, the priest, the shaman, the genius, that you can't approach God except through him. And so to the degree that a religion makes God personal to you and gives you the ability to have a relationship with God, it brings him closer to you.
Mm-hmm. I guess
so
you open yourself up so he can get closer, huh?
Right. It makes God approachable. And I think that's when, you know, Jesus does two of my favorite discourses in the book are the discourses on religion by Jesus, the discourse on religion and the second discourse on religion. And if people didn't read anything but that, I think that they would have a clear sense of what religion means.
Right.
Religion is about your personal relationship with God. And
right.
he really delineates the difference between the religions of authority
and the religion of the spirit. And the religions of authority tell you what to think about God.
Mm-hmm.
And they act to fossilize and crystallize your ideas about God. Whereas the religion of the spirit leaves you forever free to find God and teaches you more how to think, you know, about in terms of God. And so I think there's
right.
I'm not knocking the religions of authority. I'm sure they have their place, but I think everybody needs to understand, first and foremost, they are capable of having a relationship with their creator without
yeah.
middlemen. Without somebody intervening in that process. I mean, God is the personality of personalities,
mm-hmm.
the first source of personality. If we can't have a personal relationship with our Creator, we can't have a personal relationship with anybody. And it's as absurd to me to think that we need a middleman in that relationship any more than we need a middleman in any relationship. That's like saying, well, Paula, you know, you can't have a relationship with your husband except that you have this middleman in there.
Yeah. Well, I think
or your child or anybody.
When push comes to shove, you know, when times get desperate, people do go straight to God, you know. And that is real religion, is, you know, not even reading your answer book is real religion. Real religion is the relationship between each of us and our Creator God, our Father God, you know. So, and I think in any religion, any institutionalized religion, you know, people who have the belief, eventually the belief turns to faith, even if it's a desperate circumstance, you know, where you're praying for a loved one or something like that. But, you know, there comes a point when probably just about everyone turns to God for help. That is a relationship.
It's funny, Joy, because you're talking about, or I'm sorry, Paula, you were talking about, you know, how we don't need a middleman. That's absolutely true. We don't need it. It's really ironic, though, because I found I've spent a lot of my life talking to both Catholics and conservative evangelical Christians. And what I find really ironic is, at least in America, you know, a lot of people have this idea of the Catholic Church as being a very conservative kind of institution that's very much a religion of authority, or he will depend on the priest. I find that to be actually less and less true in America. I'm finding Catholics
right.
very, very inclusive, very tolerant. In fact, I'm finding priests even, I mean, I had a priest tell me once that we don't need to pray the rosary because it's a distraction and it doesn't keep our focus on Jesus. I mean, there are a lot of priests who are bending the rules and are kind of, you know, preaching what they want to preach, and they'll still hear confessions and that kind of thing, but it's more of a therapeutic thing for people. It's not really, they don't consider themselves the middleman between them and God. And irony is, the fundamentalist Protestants, I find, have much more of a religion of authority, but what they've done is they've made the Bible the middleman. It's like they've told people, you've got it. If you don't have the Bible, you know, I remember getting into it with some people in a Bible study recently, several weeks ago. I mean, some people were saying, you know, you've got to have the Bible. The Bible is the most important thing. You've got it. You know, it was almost like they were making an idol out of the Bible. And I sat there and thought to myself, what if you didn't have the Bible? What would you do? You know, would you still be able to have a relationship with God? And by the way, that also goes to us as the Urantia Book readers. And I love the Urantia Book.
Right.
I believe it's a revelation. But we're not here to worship the book. We're here to worship God. And so we need to be led by the Spirit. And my goal, at least, is to have a life that's led by the Spirit, not a life that's led by a book. As much as I love the Urantia Book, it's to point beyond itself. It's to point to God. It's not to point back to itself.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
I agree, Andre, and I think that, we absolutely have to have a relationship with God, but something you said made me remember what Sheila Keen Lund said a few weeks ago when we had her on our show. She said she went through this crisis of her beliefs,
and she probably would say a crisis of faith. And she went to her liberal Catholic priest, and she told him that she was in this total crisis, and his response was to clap and congratulate her. And that really took me back. I've thought about that quite a bit since then. You know, to have that response, to say to somebody, congratulations, you are now expanding your boundaries. Good for you. And I want to meet that man. I really do. Ever since she said that, I thought, man, what I would have given to have a priest like him. You know,
right.
who congratulated me for having a crisis of my belief to say, you know what, maybe you don't know everything, and that's a good thing. So
exactly. And you know what, I've been told, too, that I don't know if this altruism is, but I've been told that the word crisis in Chinese also means opportunity. So, you know, isn't that just a great thing? I mean, what an opportunity. What an opportunity for growth. That's why I don't get upset when people say they're doubting their faith. A lot of times, and even if you answer greeters, I think sometimes people get upset when people have doubts. I think that doubt can be the greatest blessing or the greatest curse. I mean, Judas had doubts, but he never shared them with anybody, and so he just nursed them, and they just ended up, you know, leading to him doing, you know, the terrible act of betraying Jesus. But I think that doubt can also be an opportunity to deepen our faith. And even if you answer book readers, I mean, I went through a period where I rejected the answer book for 10 years and immersed myself in Christianity. But you know what? I understand the answer book better now than I did then, because I understand a lot of the Bible quotes that the book was using. I understand a lot of, I mean, there's so much that I understand now that I didn't understand then. And you know what? Another thing I did when I was going through that period is I developed an intimate relationship with God. And I was trying to have a relationship with the answer book, you know, instead of having a relationship with God.
Again, that's the difference between belief and faith.
Right.
Well, I found those quotes. May I read them? About
Joy, we've got a couple more callers, so we'll go on.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. It says that belief has attained the – it's on paper 101, section 8. Belief has attained the level of faith when it motivates life and shapes the mode of living. The acceptance of a teaching as true is not faith. That is mere belief. Neither is certainty nor conviction faith. A state of mind attains to faith levels only when it actually dominates the mode of living. Faith is a living attribute of genuine personal religious experience. I could go on, but anyway, it says beliefs may become group possessions, but faith must be personal. Theologic beliefs can be suggested to a group, but faith can rise up only in the heart of the individual religionist.
Wow.
Anyway.
I love the section, too, that talks about the difference between a believer and a faither. And so
right.
You go, you ascend from the level of belief, from mere belief, to faith. You go
right.
From being a believer to a faither.
Yeah.
And we do.
Well,
thank you very much
for talking to me, and I will sign off and listen to others.
Thanks for calling, Joy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, hon.
Okay, we've got a caller, don't we?
Yes, hold on.
Sure.
Eight 817, you're on Block Talk Cosmic Citizen.
Yeah, hi, my name is Andrew. I've just been listening today, and I'm just really enjoying the show. I didn't really have much to say. I just wanted to let you know I'm enjoying the show, and I'm here in Texas, just gonna keep listening.
What's your name?
My name is Andrew.
Andrew, yes, okay. And are you a reader of the Arantia book?
Yeah, I've been a reader. My dad gave me the book when I was about 14. I'm 27.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't really read it from cover to cover until I was probably about 20 or so. But I had spent a lot of time in the Jesus papers and things and just kind of skipping around. And I'm
right.
In the process of kind of rereading it through again. I'm going to try and commit myself to that, you know, maybe every year, just kind of make it through it.
Wow.
back
then.
Wow.
Well, you found it when you were 14, 15. I found the book when I was 14 as well. I'm 38 now. How did you, if you don't mind me asking, how did you find the book?
Yeah, my dad just gave it to me. I went out to visit him in Vegas that year, and we were just talking about a lot of, you know, I was asking a lot of different questions and about just philosophy and different things, and he just kind of pulled out this book and said, "Here, I'm going to leave you with this for a little bit and just kind of check it out." He didn't give me any preface or anything. Just kind of handed me the book and said, "Check it out." And I kind of thumbed through it. I was pretty, you know, at that age, it was kind of hard for me to understand most of the stuff. But the strange thing was, and I don't know if that's just where the spirit of truth comes in or what, but I just kind of knew, you know, even just kind of opening it up. I felt like there was a feeling that came over me like, wow, this has got the answers I was looking for. Because, you know, I had a lot of problems with just the, not even so much just fundamentalist Christianity, but just things in the Bible, you know, Adam and Eve. I'm sure most everybody has that question, you know, the land of Nod, going off to the land of Nod and taking a wife where there's a whole other civilization and how the dinosaurs fit in and this and that. And so I just, but something about just holding the book, even without really reading it, I kind of had a feeling that it was the answer. So I don't know what that was, but.
So was your dad a reader of the book, or was he just something?
No,
kind of,
and that's the strange thing about it is I don't think he's ever read it, because I'll mention things about it, and it's like he doesn't have any idea what I'm talking about. I think
you actually got into it more than he did then.
Oh yeah, I really don't think he's read it. Like he said, he picked it up at a swap meet. Some guy gave it to him. He said, "You've got to have this book," and he sold it to him for like 50 cents, and he just kind of held on to it.
What
and
a
then,
deal!
Yeah, no kidding. And I don't know if that was just for me to get the book, or, you know, not, but he, because I know he's not a reader, so it's kind of strange that it would have transpired that way, and why he would have even, you know, handed it off to me like that when he wasn't even, you know, really a believer in it. Because I've brought up some things, and I don't even know that he believes it. It is a revelation, you know, just.
You know, Andrew, I have come to believe, because my first husband, Robert, when he was in jail, he ended up with the book. And at that very time, I was fervently praying for some good news. And consequently, the book ended up in my hands. Mm-hmm. He insisted that I buy it for him, and then insisted that I take it home with me and read it. And he never again evinced any interest in reading it himself at all. And I have heard so many stories from you Rancher Book readers like this, where somebody gave it to someone else and didn't really read it themselves, but just insisted, you know, or strongly suggested that this other person read it.
Yeah.
And I think that spirit uses people in that way, uses them as a conduit. And I really have come to believe that whenever we pray, the Heavenly Father works through his children on earth to answer our prayers. In fact, I think that is the main way God answers our prayers, because he is in all of us. And so at any time, you know, when we pray, it's a brother or sister who acts on that prayer and answers our prayer somehow. And sometimes they don't even know that's what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, I do believe that too. Yeah.
I've just seen that happen far too many times. That, you know, it's like the old, I don't know if you guys have ever heard the joke about the guy that's in a flood and he's on the roof and he's praying to God
for
salvation. And,
yeah.
And you know, a rowboat comes by and he says, "No, no, God's going to save me." And then a motorboat, "No, God's going to save me." And then finally a helicopter, "No, no, God's going to save me." And then, of course, he drowns and he gets to heaven and he says to God, "Why didn't you save me?" And God says, "I sent you a rowboat, a motorboat, and a helicopter."
Right. Yeah.
What else did you want?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, and that's because we're always looking for signs and wonders and miracles, and a lot of times God just works through ordinary things. But, you know, one of the things that, Andrew, I want to ask you, and we do have some other calls here we have to take, but before
sure.
we do, I want to ask you a question. You're only 27 years old, which I think is fantastic. I don't know about you, but I'm very optimistic about the 20-something generation. I know that a lot of old codgers are like, oh, these young kids are all selfish, they're all this, whatever. I'm very optimistic about them, and I'll tell you why. I love talking to young people about the Arrancho book because they're not set in their ways yet. They're open-minded. A lot of them are. In fact, we're gonna have a lady on in a couple of weeks who's talking about this. A lot of people are quitting church, but they're not quitting God. Do you find a strong interest in spiritual things among people your age? And but not just that. Do you find here's what I find. I find a rejection of religious institutions or of traditional ways of doing things, but I also find a real hunger, a real spiritual hunger. Do you find that to be true?
Sure.
Among a lot of people?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, my generation and the generation, you know, coming up is pretty disillusioned with organized religion and what it's become. But yet, you know, we all crave to know God, regardless whether we even, you know, realize it, you know, depending on where we are in our life at the time. But I do think, yeah, with just a bombardment of the materialism and the way the world is going right now, that people are looking for answers. And I'm pretty optimistic. I do think, you know, some of the things are going to, you know, get kind of worse as far as, you know, how we've been treating the planet and things of this nature. But we will, I think we will come through on the other side and we will progress. You know, you can't stop evolution. I think we all will continue to progress. So I try to be optimistic about it.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear.
Yeah,
well, thanks for being on our show. Thanks for being
Yeah, thanks for taking
for
my call.
In.
Appreciate it. All right. Take care.
Thanks, Andrew. Call again. Well, Andre, I don't know if we have another caller or if that's Norman.
Oh, okay. I thought we did. That's why. That's the only reason I cut Andrew short is I thought we had another caller. But
it's still 562, so I think that's Norman hanging on the line with us. So he
probably
can
probably is. Anyway, well, you know, Paula, I think it's just, and we probably have like a half hour left.
Yeah, we do. Good,
okay.
Good call.
Well, you guys, if anybody wants to call in and get in on the action here, you still have half an hour to go. Our number again is 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158. Paula, I don't know about you, but I just love it when I hear a young person like that call in. I just think that's great. When a young person says that they've been, you know, reading the books since they were 14 or whenever they find it, you know, I just think it's so great to see young people interested in spiritual things, because again, a lot of people I think make a huge mistake because they think that if a young person is rejecting traditional organized religion, that they're rejecting God, and that's just not true.
I shared that story with you guys, with you and Pato last week about those two young people sitting on that park bench and the look that they got on their face when I said when I pointed to my heart and said, "This is my church. If it isn't here, it isn't anywhere," shows me that, you know, and I'm sure when we talk to our guest coming up about why people are leaving the church in droves, we'll find out that as we evolve, as we are evolving as a race of beings on this planet, and we are evolving, and one of the great things about the Arrancho book is it gives us that good news that there is hope for humanity, because humanity keeps evolving and we do get better and we do get smarter as we go on. We will see that young people just won't accept the same old thing. They will ask for something better. They will ask for more. They will crave more. And Andre, I absolutely agree with you. When a young person picks up that book, I'm thrilled. Not for any other reason except that I was 20 years old when I picked up that book, and it's made all the difference in my life. It has gotten me through some stuff, man. I'm telling you, I was 28 when my husband was killed in a car accident, the same one that gave me the book from jail. You know, he was on a crash course with destiny, and he was killed in a car accident when I was actually 27. I had a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. That book, you know, got me through that with grace and dignity. And I know faith does that for everybody. I know that.
But my own personal story was, you know, I had lost faith in churches, but not in God.
Yes. And I don't want to, and it's funny because, and I don't want to get onto, it's really interesting, Paula, because I've said this before, I think a lot of your answer book readers, you know, may be too harsh on the church. And I don't want to suggest that the church doesn't do anything good, because it does some wonderful things. I mean, I mean, one of the things I love about the church is the ability to get into group worship and group prayer. But you know what? You don't need an organization or institution to do that. You know, I could see informal meetups coming, you know, forming. I mean, there's a site on the internet called meetup.com. You may have seen it.
Yeah.
People RSVP for events. One thing I could see happening in the future is people meeting in small groups in houses, and if they want to meet as a larger group, they can rent space in an auditorium. Someone can bring guitars and tambourines and some flutes and, you know, have a good worship. But you don't have to be part of an organization or an institution to do that. Now, and again, I'm not suggesting that that the institutions themselves are all bad. I think that there are some who will change, who will say, you know what, we've got to adapt because people are no longer satisfied with the food that we're serving. So we're going to have to upgrade here. We're going to have to start serving gourmet spiritual food instead of McDonald's. You know,
and in
so
context, what we were talking about last week, Andre, is that, you know, people just don't need any more guilt, shame, blame, doubt, fear. No, we've got enough of it now. We need hope, encouragement, love,
right,
you know, confidence.
Right.
We need to get through this life. It's tough enough. Why, oh, why do we make it harder? We have a caller, Andre. Hold on, I'll put him through. 817, you're on Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, Paula.
Hi,
Andre.
Hey, Ann, how are you?
Well, I'll talk briefly, since you've been discussing interfaith, that just seems so appropriate to call in, and then to hear young Andrew call, and he's very special in our hearts here. And the interfaith, what's been happening here locally.
I'm sorry, we're getting a really bad connection. I'm having a really hard time hearing.
Oh, I'm on a good phone. Paula, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm getting lots of static in the phone and hissing. I don't know where that's coming from. But.
Okay. Well, Paula, at least 817 showed up.
Yes, 817 showed up, yeah.
Okay, can you hear me better? Do you want me to try to
call
again?
It's a little bit better. It's a little bit better than it was.
Paula, do you want me to try to call again?
You sound fine to me, but Andre, if you can't hear, maybe she should call back.
Okay,
I hear a lot of static.
Try calling again, Ann, and I'll pick you up right away.
All right.
All right.
Actually, I'm hearing, I don't think it's Ann's phone. I don't know whose phone it is. I'm hearing funny stuff on the phone, too.
It would be mine, Andre.
See, everybody, you know what? Now, see, I have to tell the listener something. I am, somebody here, I let somebody else listen in, a friend of mine, who is a lovely young lady, and she wasn't going to be on the air. She's just going to listen in. But I might as well give her an opportunity to talk. This is Elizabeth. Elizabeth, welcome to the Cosmic Citizen Radio Show.
Thank you.
I'm sorry about that, Paula. I just wanted to make sure she got a chance to listen because she doesn't have a computer connection in her home at the moment. I had to go to the library. So actually, I think it's okay now. I can hear your phone is better now.
Okay, well, let's try Ann again. Hold on.
Okay.
Hi, Ann. I think we figured out what was happening.
Was something going on?
It was my dear friend Elizabeth. It was her phone that was, she's listening in on the phone. So anyway, go ahead, Ann, and you can talk about interfaith. You were going to talk about that.
Yes, it's been a joy to be a part of interfaith since 1993, and working the expos with you in the early 90s opened up my heart. You know, coming from a strong Baptist background, I've often said if God can do this with me, he can do it with anybody. And, you know, the farmlands where everybody looked and talked and had the same theology. Either that or you'd be kicked out of the county. And being on Interfaith Council since 1995 at Thanksgiving Square, and everybody can go to thanksgiving.org to see that website, as a Urantia book reader, has been a wonderful experience, challenging at times. And we were talking about the churches and the religious worship experiences. A lot of young people now are showing up, and several here in this community are going with me to different interfaith events and worship services. And through this, they're actually becoming more open-minded as they begin reading the Urantia book. And they're worshiping and praying and meditating with all these different religious groups so that we can find an expression in the Urantia community of what that means for us. So I just wanted to share that it's so wonderful to hear you talking about interfaith, and really enjoyed the lady who has the prison ministry. That's a great challenge. I've done prison ministry where it's all men, and I never had anything but respect paid toward me, the big federal prisons. And Andre, I look forward to your, and Paula, I look forward to your next series, and that's going to be fascinating. And fascinating to hear those callers and those people that you'll be interviewing. And thank you again for all that you are for the planet today.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you,
Ann. That's it. I'll
know you'll call again. We love you. Thanks for your participating on the board, too. It's always great.
Oh, I enjoyed that. and it was fun last week to listen on the phone and have a room full of Indians listening to you at one point. So that was, yeah, they were like, whoa. And they were actually trying to talk, but I had the phone on mute.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you kindly. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Okay, Andre, we have another caller. Hold on.
Okay.
816, you're on the Cosmic Citizen. Hello.
Hi, Paula and Andre. It's Lee in Independence.
Hey, Lee.
Hi. Hi, Andre.
How are you?
Your name is Lee. Have I met you before, Lee?
No. No, but I just sent you and Paula and Larry an email saying, last night I did, saying how much I enjoy the show and I listen to it, and I'm glad you're going to have a new series, and I just think it's great. I just love the show. And I also said in my email, I hope every Urantia group on the planet knows about it since it's archived, because I really think it's a great form of nurturing the wider community.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
you know, I love doing it. I've been a radio nerd since I was a kid, so I love talk radio, and I just think it's great. So this is an opportunity for me to do what I enjoy and serve the Father's purposes at the same time. So I just think it's great.
Well, that really comes across. But did I interrupt you, Paula? Because I wanted to respond to something that came up when Joy was on the phone.
Well, no, you didn't interrupt me. I just wanted to give our listeners a little background on Lee. Lee is almost a theologian in her own right, a true religionist. And, I'm just so glad that you joined us on the air today, Lee. And so, yeah, shoot, go ahead with what you want to say.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks. Well, I listen every week, and so this time I actually made the call. It took three times because I don't know why. I just couldn't seem to dial it right. But now I'm on the air. And when you and we're talking to Joy about that we become closer to God and then God becomes closer to us, and I just wanted to pick up on the God becomes closer to us part a little bit as I have experienced it.
Because I think that was a great question she asked, actually. So, yeah, I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Well, and I had the same question when I read that, and I didn't know exactly what that meant, but then I kind of just talked my way through it and said to myself, well, God would be as close to us as possible if we allowed it and were capable of receiving God, because that's God's desire. I mean, the only thing that's blocking it is we're not evolved enough. But so I thought, well, then I'm just going to start inviting God into my life more and, like, making that more possible. So it affected the way that I prayed. I mean, for one of the things I did was I've been trying to wean myself from ever doing, formal prayers, because I grew up in the church, and that was just a habit, to start out my prayer formally and then always have a conclusion so I could say amen. And then I started thinking, this is so ridiculous, because it's like this person could not be any closer to me, and I would never talk to my best friend like that. Like, I would never call up and say, hi, Paula. Dear Paula, I have something I want to say to you.
Oh, that's
now this next part, I'm not trying to be ludicrous. I'm just talking to you about how my mind works, because I often things come to me in pictures. And so I thought, well, I was trying to picture how that would be. And honestly, the picture that came to me was the movie Harvey, when that character, what's his name, had an imaginary rabbit friend named Harvey.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a really old movie. And everywhere he went, he would... Huh?
Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart, that's what it was. And everywhere he went in the movie, he would just talk to Harvey. And, of course, people thought he was insane because they couldn't see Harvey. But that picture stayed with me. So it just blinked right into my head. And I thought, okay, well, that would work then, because it is the same. I mean, it's just that you can't see, you know, God. So in order to receive God more, I thought I'm just going to, like, formally accept, like I would ordinary, like I would say, I love you, God. And I would say, I know you love me, and I accept your love. And that would be a good beginning to say, I accept, because it was it allowed God to get closer to me than if I just thought in my head, oh, God loves me. It was different. It was, like, closer. And so then I start thinking, well, okay, how can I deepen that even more? And so I would say, I'm really glad you love me. And then I would tell God all the ways that his love, oh, see, I'm probably going to cry, but that his love has made a difference in my life. Oh, sorry, I always get like this. But just when I do that, that's extremely moving too. But then also, because I like imagery, I would say, I want you to, you to be so close to me, you're in every cell of my body. And so then I would imagine that because, you know, paradise is at the center of every ultimate time, that God really was at the center of every cell in my body. And so there was like light just radiating out of me. And I mean, there's a lot of exercises like that where your sense of God being closer to you can deepen. Because, you know, we go towards God, but then we have to receive God too. Oh, and one of the biggest tools for me, because I did grow up, I mean, I really, you guys were just talking about the church, and I really did appreciate the church because it introduced me to Jesus. I'm one of those Jesus people. I have to cry when I say his name, but at a very early age. But what the church also kind of, you know, pounded into me was that, you know, sinful and unclean and depraved nature junk. And so accepting forgiveness has been hard for me. So
yeah.
Part of my receiving God thing has been to say, here's what I did, and I'm sorry, and I would like you to lead me to my lesson from that. But for now, I accept your forgiveness, and I promise to clear my consciousness of my recognition of sin. And
you know, Lee, I love synchronicity, and today, just today, I went and got myself a cup of coffee, and as I do, because I love Starbucks, I'll admit it.
Me too.
And I was coming home to do the show, and just thinking about Jesus, and what came to me, I was thinking about, because like you, he's in my heart. And every time I think of him, and God too, and I just want to point out that the Urantia book says that worship, the way to worship begins with prayer and leads to worship. So it's only natural, I think,
oh, yeah.
As you're talking to God, your heart swells with love, and that's exactly what you experienced a moment ago. Your heart swells, and then the emotion comes out, the emotion of love, of worship for the Heavenly Father, for the Creator, for all he does. So I was thinking of Jesus, and I get into this mode where of worship with Jesus because, and he is God on this planet and in this universe, and he does, you know, if we've seen him, we've seen God. He represents God for us. He gets us there. And so I was thinking about his bestowal on this planet, and I was asking myself, what is it I love the most about you? What do I love the most about you? And this is what came to me in what you just said. I thought, here we are, this miserable little planet. We're lost and confused, and we're our own worst enemy. And you're so willing to forgive us and so willing to absolve us. You know, the prostitute sitting at your feet, weeping at your feet, because you forgave her. You said, let it go. and go and sin no more. You were so willing to accept us where we are, how
That's
we
right.
are, for who we are, and forgive us for being wrong and for being mistaken in error. Your love was so all-encompassing and forgiving, and that was it. I mean, that was it. That's what I honed in on, your forgiveness. Thank you for forgiving us. And this is
Absolutely.
What occurred to me. Thank you for giving us back to ourselves. Thank you for restoring our dignity.
Yes.
Restoring our self-respect.
Yes, yes.
Thank
yes.
you for allowing us to be who we really are, and that is the beloved children of the eternal God. And my heart, of course, my heart just swells every time I think about his love and his mercy and his forgiveness for us being human. And you know what's amazing to me, Lee, is here comes this being from the center of creation who is perfect. As God is perfect, he's already there. He is as perfect as God is perfect. And he comes here, and he doesn't judge us. He loves us
Absolutely.
And forgives us.
What did he say to the woman that he who was taken in adultery? Before he said, go and sin no more, he said, neither do I condemn you. So he didn't even condemn her. Now, and one of the things, Lee, I wanted to just share a couple of things in response to what you're saying about God drawing near to us, that it's not
yeah.
just about us drawing near to him. Okay.
Yeah.
Here are two things that have really, really meant a lot to me. One is I practice something, and I by the way, I do like to say amen sometimes, not by myself, but when I'm with a group of people, you know, saying
oh, yeah,
grace
well,
or something,
different.
You know,
yeah.
then I don't consider that super formal because even in my group prayers, I tend to be pretty informal. If I'm feeling like crap, I'll tell God I'm feeling like crap, even in front of other people. I'll say, God, you know, I'm feeling like crap today, but I'm still going to, you know. But anyway, what I was going to say was I practice something, and I think I've spoken about this on the show before. I mean, it may be worth a whole show to talk about this, but I practice something called listening prayer, which is pretty self-explanatory. But what I do is I will write my prayers down in a journal, and I try to make them as raw and real as possible. However I'm feeling that day, I will write it down. You know, I'll just write a letter to God, okay, in my journal. And then I think I sit on my computer and do it. I email them to myself and put them in a folder, okay? And then I will sit and listen to what I hear God saying to my heart, and then I write that down, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And God has said some pretty amazing things. I mean, obviously, God doesn't speak in an audible voice. He speaks in a still, small voice in our hearts. But, you know, I remember one time God said to me, he said, you know, I grew up in a very verbally abusive home. And I remember God said, he said, you know, you're afraid to turn your will and your life over to me because you're afraid
mm-hmm.
I'm going to treat you like, I'm going to reject you like your father did. He said,
mm-hmm.
and God said, I heard God say, you know, your father put you down, but I will lift you up. Your father called you names, but I will sing your praises.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there and immediately, my immediate response was, wait a minute, I'm supposed to praise God. God's not going to praise me. And God
mm-hmm.
said, no, the universe doesn't work that way, Andre. And he said, the angels sing songs about you. I mean, there's so much, God, there's so much that we're missing out on if we don't just let ourselves receive God's love.
Yeah.
There's a great
yeah.
Bible verse I think it's Romans 7, or no, I'm sorry, 2 Corinthians 1, where Paul says that we can comfort others in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. So in order to comfort others, we need to know how to receive comfort from God. And so, you know, and then what happens is when we get that love, it fills us up, and it fills, and our cup runneth over, as they say, you know, and it just spills over onto other people. And so that just to me, I mean, and I think about this because prayer is, you know, what is it? It's two-way communication. That's what the Urantia book says. So it's not just one way. It's not just monologue. It's two-way communication.
Right.
And the
yes.
fact that we can have that. We can have that with God. And let me just say one more thing, and I'm kind of on a soapbox here, I know, but I'll just say
no,
one more thing, and that is...
Great. It's a great soapbox, Andre.
That is that... you know, Lee, you said that the church kind of told you this idea that, you know, we're sinful and unclean. Well, one of the things that has really helped me in the Urantia book is the way the Urantia book redefines sin. That in order for something to be sin, we have to do it on purpose. You know, most of the things that we feel guilty about aren't even sin. You know, the things, our imperfections are not sin. So we're feeling guilty about a lot of things. We don't even need to ask forgiveness for them, a lot of the things that we feel guilty about, because there's nothing to forgive. You know, there's a place too, and one of my favorite, and I think one of the most profound passages in the Urantia book, is Jesus' sermon on divine forgiveness. And he says, and Peter and Andrew, I think, are arguing about, do we have to ask for forgiveness or does God forgive us first? And Jesus says, you both err in your opinions because you don't understand the intimate relationship that a parent and child has for each other. He says, that it's very, in rare circumstances, he says, in most cases, parents don't have to forgive a normal and average child. There's nothing to forgive. A lot of times the child makes a mistake and they feel guilty and they feel a sense of separation from the parent, but the wise parent understands that no separation ever really occurred because the wise parent understands the child's immature and they're going to make these mistakes. But, really, in fact, there's a great part where he says, sin is a part of creature consciousness, but it's not a part of God's consciousness.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. But, and I agree, Andre, but for me, just because I'm, still I have that overlay from childhood, it really helps me just to say to God, here's what I did, and I hope to learn a lesson from it, because the Orange Book says, sin is just a stepping stone forward if you learn your lesson, and to say, and I know you forgive me because you already forgave me before I even talked to you about it.
That's right.
So I accept that forgiveness, and I took that from just one little line, and I don't recall which paper, but it was where Jesus was instructing the apostles, and he said that they must bar their consciousness of sin because that would get in the way of their ministry. And he said, just confess your sins and know that you're forgiven, and then sort of clean your consciousness of it. And that one line made a huge impression on me because I thought, wow, I would have to actively do that to happen, for that to happen. but you can do it. And so, because it's an act of faith to do that.
Well, Jesus said something so simple. He said, seek and you will find.
Yeah.
And really, what he's saying essentially is what we focus on is what we find. And so if we're focusing always on sin and the negative, then that's where our focus is, and that's what we're finding. And we know from the Arantia book that he taught his brothers and sisters, and he taught always in the positive. He did not teach in the negative. He did not say, do not do this, do not do that. He said, do this, do that.
Yeah.
And so
exactly.
He taught always in the positive. He would say things like, you would do well to go here and do this, and it would behoove you to do that, And so I think that you're so right, Lee, that when we focus on sin, I mean, whatever we put our attention on is essentially what we're focused on. And, it's obvious that we're going to make mistakes, but when we beat ourselves up so brutally, I don't think we serve anybody. We certainly don't serve those that we want to help, and we certainly don't serve ourselves by beating ourselves up incessantly.
Yeah, and I want to affirm where you're coming from, Lee. I understand that if it gives you a sense of closeness to God, to accept that forgiveness, I think that's awesome. I do think, though, the Urantia book does say something, though. Doesn't it say something, Paul, about being sun-conscious rather than sin-conscious?
I don't know. I'd like to see that one.
I thought maybe that's not a Urantia. Maybe that's something that a Urantia book reader made up. I don't remember. I remember hearing something about that once. Being sun-conscious.
Hey, Andre, we got 1 minute, so we're having a great time. I know, but I just.
Well, that's what happens when the spirit leaves our show. We just time flies and we just go where we go.
Thank you for letting me call, and I'll hang up so you can close up now.
And call again.
Please do.
Oh, thank you. I will. Okay, bye.
Bye. Well, Paula, we've come to a close here again with another one of our shows, and next week I'm going to try to get Carlton Pearson on. Carlton Pearson, I mentioned, is a pastor who got his church to much smaller numbers because he believes that everybody's going to heaven. So hopefully we'll be able to get him on the air. And if not, well, we'll get somebody else. But I'm trying. I'm going to hopefully be able to do that. So
okay. And before we close, Larry Watkins, our great producer and tech guy, has been telling me on the board to be sure and tell people to go and check out the link to the bios of our guests, because there's lots of great links to their websites and great information about the guests that we've had, like Pato Banton and Sheila Keen Lund and all of them, Diane LeBrecht. They're all there, so please do check the links for our guests.
Yes.
The bios there.
And thanks again for listening to another edition of The Cosmic Citizen. We'll see you next week.
Okay, thanks, guys. Bye for now.